Welcome our next storyteller, Mr. Alex Johnson.
So it's not that I dislike people exactly. And in fact, on a one-to-one basis, I really love most people that I've ever met. And even in twos and threes and fours, people can be really great. it's only when the people continue to mass that things start getting a little more unsettling for me, and I become less comfortable, and I become less honest, and it's more difficult for me to trust the situation, whatever it is that I'm in with a large group of people. Don't get me wrong, I still can get the thrill of being in the middle of a giant city just thrumming with life and standing at the top of a staircase and letting the river of humanity roll over you like you're just a stone in this space. And you know, but even then, I think what I love about it is that it's the individual faces that are so remarkable. And you know, you can see a face and imagine a story, and then you see another person, you imagine where they're going to, and you can imagine what, you know, where they were earlier today or the struggles that they're having. And so it's still this very personal, one-on-one, intimate relationship that I really love in those spaces. But in cities, you know, it's you can have those moments, but then for me, it becomes very quickly, I become uncomfortable. You know, it's who can I trust if I'm in need? You know, where can I rest if I'm tired? Where will I be able to pee? You've all been there in a city. And it's the larger things too, which I don't even have to explain to you all, but the mob mentality of large groups of people, the injustice, the collective hate that we all are aware of that's possible. And it's rarely capable. And those things are rarely capable. You know, individuals are rarely capable of those things, but together, collectively, in mass, we are. And this is not at all the case with trees. I will say flatly that I have never met a tree I couldn't trust. Sure, a widowmaker could come snapping down in the middle of a windy night and break me in half. But I've never stood in a grove of trees and wondered about their intentions or what they might be capable of. You know, the weirdest I've ever felt in trees, the closest I've come to anything like that is in the aspen groves. And just last week, I was actually driving in a car with three people who are here in the audience today. And, you know, we were turning around Marcelina, you know, in all of its splendor. And then that's when you really enter into these incredible aspen groves that are just up the slope from us. And, you know, I began to talk out loud, sharing my enthusiasm for what, you know, I've learned about the aspen, and that what I was reminded of by them, by being in them. So aspen are very unique among living organisms, because these large, huge groves are actually a single living thing. They're all interconnected by roots. They're the exact same genetics. They're the exact same creature. And each individual tree might only live for 100 or 150 years, just like the trees in this orchard, which feels like a long time. But aspen groves live for thousands of years by dying and putting out more roots, shooting up another shoot, dying, putting out more shoots, and the roots live on and on and on, and they spread and they spread and they spread. The aspen groves up just up the hill are some of the largest living organisms ever known to humans on the entire planet. It's really incredible. And so, you know, I guess that weird feeling I get is just really knowing that and looking out into them and seeing that, you know, I am in fact in this single organism. You know, they're all bent the exact same way. You know, so many of them are the same exact color. Their leaves are changing at the exact same moment on the same day. And that's because they're one thing. So, you know, as I mentioned, the largeness of them, the magnitude, you know, that's remarkable in and of its own right. But what I find most remarkable about aspen is their age. So the oldest aspen grove ever known is just to the west of us in Utah, in the Fish Lake National Forest. And it's over 100 acres in size. And scientists have determined, well, for one, they've given it a name, which I really enjoy. It's called Pando, which means I spread in Latin. And scientists estimate that this organism is somewhere between 80,000 to a million years old. So just to put that into perspective, humans, our species, Homo sapiens sapiens, is only 200,000 years old. You know, most living species, their entire span of existence on the planet is a million years old. So this organism is living the length of time of a species. So when Pando was dropping from a tree as a seed and hitting the earth, we were just evolving as a species in Africa. And aspen aren't the only trees that are remarkable and demand a certain sort of respect among us, or, you know, from me. And, you know, I believe that we should respect because of it. The lowly mountain juniper in our backyard. The oldest known juniper is 1,500 years old. That's still really old. That's when Maya were building pyramids. You know, thinking about that, some of the trees in our backyards, the trees that we run past or bike past after work, or, you know, look out our windows at, are as old as 400 human generations. They're growing so slowly and for so long that the mountains are eroding around them. You know, they're growing as slowly or quickly, if depending on your perspective, as the mountains are eroding off to the sea. How can I not trust that kind of presence? You know, that kind of patience, that knowing of a world that's so much bigger than me and so much bigger than us. It's a strength and a wisdom. And I really do believe it's a certain authority. You know, an example of that, I have another tree that I love very much, is the capuchin oak, which is a single oak tree that lives in what was once the Jed Forest of the borderlands of England and Scotland. It used to be a massive, massive forest with these huge ancient trees that would grow and die and grow and die, and, you know, just this incredible forest. Think of Ivanhoe, if you've ever read it. That was a real place. And now there's just one tree left. And that tree stands on the edge of a stream, and now, you know, and it always had stood on that stream, and now on the other side of it is a highway. And so not too many years ago, my brother and I were walking on that highway, and we were taking a pilgrimage to our family's castle that we'd learned about. It was the Kerr clan, and it was the Ferniehirst Castle, and it's been the only trip my brother and I have ever gone on together. But we were moved to go see this castle that once, as soon as we knew it existed, we decided we were going to go and see it together. And so we, you know, flew into Edinburgh and found out how to get there, and really just on a wing and a prayer went out in search of this castle. And so we were got to the closest village, and we were walking out on this highway to get to the castle, and we saw this tree. And so we stopped, and we sat underneath it, and we touched the bark, and we felt the leaves, and we just knew it was this old tree. And then I had a sense that, you know, this was a tree that potentially my ancestors had known. And in fact, you know, what I learned later was that it has a name. It's the Capuchin oak, and it's called that because the Capuchin monks used to sit underneath it as they were walking between the various villages of the ancient forest. And still to this day, the youth of the village, when they're coming of age, they ride on a horse from the village out to this tree, and they pick a leaf, you know, from the lowest bough, and they put it on their lapel, and that's their entering into adulthood. So I have one more story, one more tree. All of this, I think, is why that my husband and I chose to get legally married in the company of great trees. We chose a tree that also has a name. It's called the telescope tree. And it's a giant sequoia at the top of the Mariposa Grove in Yosemite National Park. And sequoias, of course, you all know, are also spectacular trees. They're some of the largest single trees on Earth by mass and size and volume. They have bark so thick that they usually survive any fire that comes through the forest. But the telescope tree is unique because it's actually been burned. And the entire inside of this tree has been burned all the way through to the sky. And so if you were to stand inside of it at night, you could look up 200 feet and see the stars up above. And so my husband, Pete, and I decided to go there with a small group of people and to stand in it under a blue sky day. And, you know, what's also remarkable about this tree is not only that it's been burned all the way through, but that it's still alive. So the trees are, the branches are still green, and it's still fruiting cones. And so as we were standing inside of this tree with my mother officiating and our closest friends witnessing us, it was these beings, this presence, this collective gathering of not only the people, but also the trees that I think gave us the authority to commit and really consecrate the love that we had. And really, I don't know. In all of my life, I know of no authority greater than that. And so, these trees, all of these trees, they're going to continue to live. And they're going to wait, and they're going to breathe, and they're going to watch in their own way. And, you know, I really believe they're learning, and they're witnessing, and they have a knowledge about this world that we will never have. And I'm just really glad that they will remember us thousands of years from now. Thank you.